to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Rod Oram's joining us this morning. Hi, Rod. How are you?
Good morning, Mikey. Very well, thank you.
Remember about a year ago, and this was the most boring country in the world for politics, wasn't it?
It was.
There wasn't anything. I mean,
I think it was one for the aficionados. We certainly didn't get much attention beyond our borders, I don't think.
Look at what's happened now. It's all gone completely unexpected, hasn't it? Including the were you surprised that Bill English stood down a week or two after the conference?
No, I'm not. You can't lose two elections in your political career like that. And yes,
do you think he thanked John Key for helping him lose the election?
That's very complicated. I mean, they've known each other for a long time. They've worked together for a long time. It's not for me to try and unpick that relationship. And of course, the key part was an inability to form a coalition, which is pretty fundamental after 21 years of MMP. Yes, there was a decent-sized vote for National as a party, but this is MMP, and the failure to be able to put together a coalition, burn off your coalition partners before you even from the previous election. It's time for, you know, Bill English is very good in many ways, very much time for him to move on, and he certainly deserves a break because he's been in Parliament pretty much half his life.
And yeah, and he, you know, he had to sort of lose that election, then be live in John Key's shadow for the last 9 years, sort of thing. Even though, you know, he did very well out of it, he failed to foresee the global banking crisis when it happened. But he still managed to stay on as Minister of Finance, which I thought was interesting at the time. Yeah, you know? So he obviously has some kudos there. But so he's gone now, and everybody's champing at the bit. Is it a good race for the leadership of the National Party? And shouldn't we just be... My money's on Stephen Joyce straight away.
First of all, any race is a good race, and the more the people are in it, the better, because that really sort of... whilst it can be very disruptive for the party itself, ultimately it gets the party to sort itself out as to, you know, what it really believes. But it does sound more and more like that wonderful old greyhound dog racing track at the beginning of this political segment, but just entirely confined to the National Party.
Do you think that the young Nats will be absolutely jumping out of their pearls and pants because it means someone's going to move up the ladder somewhere along the line?
Yes. This is going to be a generation change. And there will be probably a number of disappointed contenders for the leadership. I'm not trying to pick a winner here, but if Joyce doesn't succeed, or if Collins doesn't succeed, would they move on? I don't know. Perhaps Joyce more likely than Collins. So yes, there is change going on. But one of the things that intrigues me, and I have no idea what the answer is when you look at those five candidates, and if I was a young Nat, I'm not sure what I'd feel about any of them in terms of, do I think these people are locked onto the issues that I as a young person and a young Nat are involved in. So, for example, the young Nats wholeheartedly endorsed the Generation Zero push for a Zero Carbon Act to get us on the right track on climate change. I don't think there is one member of that. There's not one amongst those five candidates for leader that have expressed any kind of interest in that or much of an interest in climate change. So I think the young Nats would be a little lost in that field.
So are you prepared to put your sort of your money on anybody?
No, not at all. I'm prepared to make comments on on various candidates. But this is an intensely internal political thing going on here, and I have no idea what are the great things seething and coursing through the members of the National Party caucus.
It will be seething and coursing through too, won't it? Because each of those people that have thrown their hat in the ring, each of those parliamentarians, will be trying to gather up a little posse, a support posse, but then if you've been part of, you don't really want to be known as part of somebody's support posse, because even though you think they might win it, you don't want to sort of be kicked out if someone else gets it. You don't know who sort of so many different things in play.
Yeah, I think one loser we can be pretty sure about is Paula Bennett as deputy. She has suggested, and it's very good, that role go to a vote. And almost certainly there'll be one or more of the disappointed candidates for leaderhood want that job. And Bennett has no credibility, I would imagine, in caucus because of her inability to play a role in the coalition negotiations, a fruitful role. So
She'd stick on in Parliament, though, wouldn't she?
Yes, possibly. She's younger, but again...
She loves never it.
Which she does, and I'm sorry to not be completely unable to look inside these people's heads and hearts. I just don't know.
Well, we don't think you want to look in the hearts.
But let me just make a couple of comments about the candidates. Looking at the comments they made, for example, in a Herald piece that Audrey Young did, where she asked the same question to each of them, there was nothing that any of them said that showed they had any particular interest in the big issues gripping the nation. It was slagging off Labour, all promises, no delivery, all that kind of stuff. So it's hard to look at any of them and say, do they actually understand what's going on in the country and what needs to be done? And could they offer an intelligent, practical, ideologically aligned to their members' view of policies that would do those things? And the most extraordinary comment of all was Simon Bridges. They were all asked about Trump. But he said, Trump's bringing, getting American companies to invest, more in the American economy. And there's two problems with that statement. First of all, that was going on heavily before Trump came along, and there's no sign of any particular pickup in that. Yes, some money is being repatriated by the likes of Apple that have been stashing it overseas. But the projects where companies have, with lots of publicity, said, we're going to reinvest in, we're going to invest here rather than overseas, are high profile, but don't necessarily, they're small versus the overall investment patterns of those companies around the world. But the bigger problem is to say that, Trump's getting more American companies to invest more in the United States is absolutely the same as praising Mussolini for having the trains run on time. it is completely...
At a terrible, painful, destructive expense. Is that what you're saying?
Trains, good. I like trains running on time. Very helpful. But I think a political leader has to be doing a whole bunch of other things properly as well.
Speaking of big corporations, let's come on home now. Come on home and have a chat about a couple of our big ones. I spoke to the Prime Minister, I spoke to Jacinda about the Fletcher Building issues and the sort of the revelations that Fletcher Building has really exhibited nothing but terribly bad practice and sort of has certainly not shone as the leader of our building community and construction community in New Zealand. In fact, they've made some terrible blunders which are going to cost them millions and millions of dollars, possibly the company, and because the whole country is relying on the construction industry and the housing industry in New Zealand at the moment to get us back on track and to get us out of this the stress of people not being able to buy their own houses and immigration, all that sort of stuff. I asked her what sort of damage that could possibly do to New Zealand and what the sort of the blowback's going to be on it. It's not only Fletcher's, it's Fonterra as well, I believe, after reading an article that you wrote.
Right.
Yes, yeah. Let me take this one at a time. There is a common theme, though, about incredibly poor corporate governance and very bad decisions flowing from that. First
and
of
people
all,
getting paid heaps to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, Fletcher, it's my pick, Fletcher's current situation, for the worst corporate disaster in New Zealand since the 1987 share market crash. This is the worst corporate disaster in New Zealand since the stock market crash in 1987. Oh, I like that. Very good. That's about right. Right tone and everything. It needs to be louder, absolutely louder. The key thing here is... Yes, very good. Now, the key thing here is this is a division of Fletcher that's lost $1 billion on $2.5 billion of revenue. So, yeah, correct. So the International Convention Centre in Auckland going up on Hobson Street opposite Sky City, Fletcher's contract, we think, is around the $400 million to $500 million bracket. And they have identified potential losses of $410 million.
Wow.
Do they
just no one comes to work and they're building it out of Leamingtons, or what's going on?
What happened was there was a very strong culture in the construction division overall of Fletcher, and particularly in building and interiors. Those are the people who actually build buildings as opposed to building, you know, highways or something.
Yeah.
And they had a very strong culture of bidding very aggressively, and then trying to, if they bid too tightly and they were short of money, they'd get some more money on some design changes and
cut a few corners.
Yeah, well, they still built decent buildings.
Yeah,
and some
buildings.
Yeah, and they would also had the benefit of supplying them a lot of building materials through their own businesses, because they build lots of that stuff, make lots of that stuff. But two things happened. First of all, a new chief executive came along, Adamson, who was trying to change the culture of the company overall, which was a reasonable thing to do, but he did it badly. In that process, he drove a lot of people with knowledge out of the business. But the other thing happened was the whole construction sector moved to a whole different level of professionalism and way of doing things. So fixed price contracts, very, very ferociously negotiated. So the government had very powerful negotiators, external consultants on the Justice Precinct in Christchurch, on the Convention Centre in Auckland. And Fletcher were complete, I was about to say babes in the wood, but that's unkind to babes. They were complete idiots, frankly, I would say. And
which is really astounding for a company that has been held, you know, as held high as one of our one of our nation's most impressive.
This,
you know,
this is our biggest construction company in the country, has been for decades, they do good work. So then, of course, there's this complete breakdown in information flowing from increasingly. A destabilized, demoralized, hollowed out management up to the board.
And of course, the modern style is to just cover up everything you can, but hide as much of it as you can and say everything's sweet.
Yeah. So as even as recently as this time last week, when Ralph Norris, the chairman, was trying to explain what was happening, he was sort of surprised that Quantity Surveyors were 100% wrong on some things. Well, 100, you know, so it's not going to cost you $10. It's going to cost you $20 for this particular knob. And Quantity Surveyors are not, they have enormous skills, but they're only as good as the information they get. So you have to tell them exactly what building you want to be built, and they can tell you pretty well what that's going to cost. So it's garbage in, garbage out, though. If you give them imperfect designs, which happened through this, Fletcher was bidding on these designs for fixed-price contracts before the designs were properly settled, and the subsequent changes afterwards would push up the costs. You're going to get Quantity Surveyors... Well, Quantity Surveyors are going to be no help to you. So the fact that Norris should sound surprised that Quantity Surveyors didn't come up with the right number, is a further failure to just look at the Fletcher's own failures. I mean, I could talk for hours about this. I mean, it's fundamental. It's serious. And
tell us about the Fonterra, the similarities to the Fonterra situation at the moment, because Fonterra are super, super, super massive, and they're going to do everything they can to say everything's fine. Are they going to be able to do that, or are they going to just have to go whoopsie?
There was a period after a very high milk price, 2013-14, whereby Fonterra plunged into something like $2 billion of capital expenditure. Basically, one-third. One-third went into plant here in New Zealand. One-third went to building farms in China. And one-third went to buying an 18.8% stake in Beingmate, which is a Chinese company, which does make its own infant formulas, buys other people's brands, had a big distribution network. I stress the word had. Fonterra, so the focus now is on Beingmate. They took a very small write-down at the year-end accounts for the year ended July last year in their results last September, a very small write-down. But the news has only got worse since. And so right now the board will be deciding how big a write-down to take for the results coming out on March the 21st. That's for the first half of this year. If you sort of read my piece in Newsroom last weekend, I laid out there a lot of the issues as to how they just have got, they've been in cloud cuckoo land on this, as far as I can tell. And again, it comes back to governance. What I do know more about in Fonterra than I do about Fletcher is I have a reasonably good feel for what the culture's like in the boardroom. Because it's a co-op, there are farmer shareholders who take a very keen interest in what goes on in their business, and they take a very keen interest in what goes on in the boardroom. And so all the way through the old co-ops, even before Fonterra came together in 2001, it's always, there are no secrets in a co-op. Well, it's hard to keep a secret in a co-op. So if you talk to enough people in the know, you really build up a good picture. And it's a very insular culture in the Fonterra boardroom. They are not big on introspection. They don't even ask themselves every 6 months, is this big investment we made performing and delivering the strategic benefits it said they would? There's just always, in Beingmate's case, it was always a problem with the market, not the company, and it was always going to come right. They're still saying that. So they're not big on introspection, and they're certainly not big on outside views. There are some independent directors from outside the dairy industry, by all accounts, John Wilson, the chairman of Fonterra, relies on them quite heavily, but sometimes at the expense of shutting out independent views from more widely.
More considered brains. Potentially, if the same, if I mean, that's Fonterra could suffer a huge shake. With stuff like that going on this year, and you know, we rely so much on that singular corporation, don't we, in this country?
I have no idea what sort of write-off they'll take, other than they will try and make it as small as possible, a write-off, and they will keep arguing this.
How long can you keep?
Isn't that
what Fletcher's been trying to do, just to do it for as long as possible until it really just goes ba-dumpf?
I can't put myself in the shoes or head of directors in either board. You know, hindsight and partial knowledge looking in from the outside is a fine thing, but it's not the same as actually being there as to what the discussions were. I think in Fonterra there is a bit of a culture in the boardroom, hope for the best but fail to plan for the worst. Is how I'd summarize it.
All right. Hey, Rod, thank you so much for talking to us this morning. If people want to have a look at your article about Fonterra, go to newsroom.co.nz.
Yes, absolutely. And it's the longest column I've ever written by some considerable measure, but I think it's still fairly readable.
Well done, Rod.
Thank you. I appreciate the support.
Thank you very much.
See you guys.
See you next time.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.